Hello and welcome back to the Comic Lyric Podcast, the podcast that does deep dives into the best, worst, and middest of comic books, graphic novels, and sometimes mangas. I'm your host, the soon-to-be-known-as Comic Stan, and with me, as always, is my wonderful co-host, it's Jamie.
I mean, within the context, I'll take wonderful.
There was literally an adjective in the name of the character who we're talking about today. I was like, I can't not go with wonderful.
I would have preferred wondrous.
Yeah. Is there any others? Wonder...
Wanderlust.
That's a weird German thing, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, yeah.
Is it pronounced like Wanderlust?
Wanderlust, yeah.
Wunderbar, is that a thing?
That's just wonderful in German.
Wunderbar.
Wunderbar,
no, let's just go with that then. So, Wonder Woman, as I've given away, obviously, from the start. Wonder Woman we are covering, and it's going to be a particularly interesting one because it's by a certain comic book writer who may or may not have mentioned before on here, and who may or may not be somewhat controversial with some of the comic book fans.
Alan Moore?
No, for once. The one time that it's not.
I think that may be, other than the actual dedicated Alan Moore episodes, the fastest I've ever gotten him in.
The fastest Alan Moore has ever come up in a conversation that wasn't about his work.
Absolutely.
Or wizardry.
Which is the context within which he would like to be discussed, I think.
I think he'd be like to be discussed for his current work. And we have mentioned it before. Because
yes.
He had the, if anyone who hasn't heard, one of the greatest opening lines of a book or written text ever.
It was the best of times. It was the first of times.
And it was about the Big Bang, so it's even funnier that way. So before we get to Wonder Woman,
yes,
we are going to touch on, we are quite late to the, I don't want to say party, because that's not right. Funeral is more appropriate, I guess.
Apt, yes.
But we are talking about
Akira Toriyama, who unfortunately passed away on the 1st of March this year.
Yes, and as I said, we are a bit late due to the scheduling of how we record episodes. It happened just after we recorded the last one. So even though it's a week removed more so that we're talking about it, we thought we'd just mention it at least briefly, just to acknowledge, because we are and have been at times of our lives both Dragon Ball Z fans.
Yeah, absolutely. And I read Dragon Ball as a younger man, and it was one of the most amazing things I'd ever read as a kid.
And I say,
really loved it.
I say we're fans. Apparently most of the bloody world was afterwards.
Yeah, I mean, I think the fact that his work was syndicated so heavily in the West, you know, Dragon Ball Z making its way onto Cartoon Network meant that so many like American and European children grew up with it.
Yeah.
So it's really, really tragic. You know, an amazing oeuvre of work that he's created, a really amazing body of work. He was an illustrator and a character creator. And I think you could probably argue that Goku has one of the most interesting silhouettes in manga.
Absolutely, yep.
And you know, in terms of character creation, creating an amazing silhouette that is recognizable to the level that Goku now is a real coup de grace. And so it's just a real loss for the community.
Unfortunately, dying at, I believe, 68. I'm pretty sure I heard that was the age. And unfortunately, that's not too uncommon with manga artists and writers, because
but relative to Japanese people, he basically died in his 20s.
Yes, exactly.
You know,
and it is a unfortunate thing to do with, like, I don't know if the term still applies to manga creation, but crunch, like being kind of overworked, unfortunately, does it appears to be a trend. We don't know for sure that was a contributing factor, but it does seem to be a trend with manga artists and writers. Dragon Ball Z, I think, was the first thing, the first television thing that as a kid that I was like, I need to get home to catch the next episode.
Totally.
And because it was on like Cartoon Network, it was like 4 o'clock.
Yeah.
So you had to like make sure you got home quick to be in time. My earliest memory of being like, I need to see the next episode of this thing. So it almost feels like our generation's first prestige TV.
Absolutely.
Like, before like Sopranos and The Wire, like we had this like, what's Goku going to do next? And at least a couple of times it was, he's going to power up for another half an hour, which was great. I'm not
like,
having a laugh.
Like, particularly the Frieza saga and the Cell saga. The culmination of the Cell saga was, you know, one of my abiding memories from my childhood. So thank you so much to Mr. Toriyama for everything that you gave us.
I've got two little anecdotes.
Oh, amazing. Because I wasn't ready to eulogize him in a meaningful way.
One I just heard today. Again, we're not going in depth now. Maybe next week we might do something.
Oh.
Stay tuned to the end of the episode to find out what that is. But two little anecdotes I heard, rather than a full eulogy, because again, we're a week late to the party and it's, you know, other people have given much better, more in-depth eulogies and just discussions about him and his work. Two things. One I heard today, apparently he, if not created, really pioneered the art style that you mentioned last week.
Chibi art
the
style.
The chibi art style. For anyone who didn't hear that before, it's you described it with a specific reference to Slam Dunk that we talked about. The way I heard it was sometimes you just an oversimplified version of the character will just be put in for humor or far away. Yeah. They just suddenly look very simple. And someone described it as the earliest incarnation of the Funko Pop style.
Yeah, absolutely. And Funko Pops have a really chibi style. I probably, as a Western commentator, am I a commentator, podcaster, human?
Content creator.
Oh,
probably,
no.
That's
not a label I want to use for myself at any point in my life.
It's how I introduce myself in the street now.
as long as we're not trying to be influencers, I think it's okay.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, I probably should have referenced that when we actually had a more in-depth discussion about chibi art, but I didn't know that that was one of his things, and that's really cool and really interesting.
And for something that has the other artist then went on to use and incorporate within the whole manga style, it's pretty good. The other one, this is a kind of a funny thing. So after a few day or two after his death, the news of his death came out, someone posted something which got taken a bit seriously but was then discovered to just be a meme. And what it was, I wish I hadn't said that before I told you, because I wish I could have gauged your reaction if I just said it straight. But the post was basically, in honor of his passing, the Mexican cartels have called a truce for a day. And people were like, is that true?
Because was it true?
No, it's not true.
It that would have been so amazing.
A completely unverified post. But it was that level where you were like, I mean, maybe.
Like, did they get Dragon Ball Z over there?
That age group, like that age that they could have been. So apparently that's not true. But because I looked it up to see if it was or not, what I did find was there was an interesting situation in Mexico where towards the end of the Dragon Ball GT series, a lot of Mexican cities were planning to show the final episodes out in large public gatherings.
Okay, that popular there?
It was that popular, exactly.
That's amazing.
The problem was, they didn't have any of the rights to actually do so. So I believe the company is Toei, who owned the rights.
Yes, it is, yeah.
They had to send a letter through the Japanese embassy to the Mexican government to be like, yeah, that's legally not allowed and that's a copyright thing. And their point of view, I bang on about like, oh, companies and copyright, you bastards. Their point was like, there are avenues that will reward the creators if you watch it through the proper channels, basically,
yes,
rather than this way. So most of them did get stopped, but there was one, a city, Juarez, where the mayor made a deal with Tomei. Some kind of deal, I don't know what
he
the
paid
finances
them.
Were.
He just went and paid them. Them. That's amazing.
And then, so in Juarez, they were able to show it to like thousands of people potentially in the cities. So that, like, the idea that Dragon Ball caused an international diplomatic incident, I thought was an interesting point.
Yeah. So, you know, the snow has descended for Toriyama, but may he rest in peace.
And hopefully, if we can find all of the Dragon Balls, we could bring him back.
Oh, don't. Oh, no. That's an idea, isn't it?
Should I cut that out?
No, it's quite funny.
It's like honoring his, like, let's find the Dragon Balls.
No, it's beautiful. Yes. It's a wonderfully touching tribute,
He's
Ryan.
Probably riding a cloud. The Nimbus, was that what it's called? Yes. He's probably riding the Nimbus right now.
He is.
So, now on to the main event, Wonder Woman 2023. Yes. Get into the preamble of the details and the credits and whatnot. So
this is Tom King, right?
Yep. And before we get into that, okay, let's go.
Every time.
I want to make it a thing. So yes, Tom King, notorious comic book writer for this day and age, because he's definitely one of those I've discovered. He's a kind of love him or hate him kind of writers, because I personally love him. He's written at least three of my favorite comic book superhero comic books, especially.
Yes.
But I also see the complaints.
I love the Supergirl run.
Supergirl is one of the best. Human Target is one of my favorite comics of all time. I love that.
Totally. Like we've really waxed lyrical. Like Tom King featured really heavily in our best of list last year, didn't he?
Yeah. And for anyone who has read it, I don't think you have. His Vision run.
I've heard good things. Wasn't that the one that a lot of the stuff for the TV show
WandaVision
came from?
Yeah. And Mr. Miracle was a fantastic one as well.
Yeah.
He's also, but I understand the criticisms I see in some of the ones that didn't work for me, where, you know, we can get across kind of a bit lofty, kind of swing and a miss when it kind of aims too high sometimes in his writing.
Yeah.
And I think I'm going to get into some of the issues I do have with his style in this a little more as well. Not to say I hate it, like, or not say that I liked it or didn't like it. We'll get into that. But just to give the proper credit, written by Tom King,
yep,
and art by Daniel Semper. So,
cool.
So do you want to give us a brief breakdown, I would say, of the first issue story? I think that's enough to set up what the general story, yeah, of this run is.
Absolutely. So there is a murder.
There's been a murder.
Yeah, I mean, that is essentially the opening passage.
Several murders.
Yeah, well, a mass murder, you could argue.
So I saw that. I was like, I looked at the numbers of how many people died. I was like, is that the threshold for mass murder? It's the most morbid maths you can possibly do. It's like, at what point does it reach mass murder stats?
Legally, there will be a point. There will need to be a point. There will need to be a specific numerical point for it to be a law.
They need to define it.
They, yeah, need to define it. And then, similarly to the Spider-Man comic we read recently, there's then a huge overcorrection on behalf of the establishment.
The government.
The government, because it turns out it's an Amazonian woman who has committed the murder. And so we are dropped into a world where all of the Amazonians are being removed by America, some forcibly, some through choice. And that obviously puts Wonder Woman in a very difficult position, because she is an Amazonian and is bound to protect her people.
Yep.
But is also fucking Wonder Woman. She has to do what's right. And so, yeah, I think that's an apt...
I think that's the most apt breakdown of a story you've ever given. Because
I know. Am I losing my touch, Ryan? Remember when they were really avant-garde?
I would say you've gotten better, but that's that's more to describe you've come over to my side more.
Yeah, absolutely. I've just resigned myself to the fact that I need to be able to give good York notes.
Yeah. Dragged you kicking and screaming into the literal. Like, what literally happened?
Yeah.
Don't give me this metaphor bollocks. Just
no,
what actually
I
happened?
Want metaphors.
Yeah. And I mean, the metaphors here, I think, are definitely more akin to current events, I think, and current climate, I think, is the best way to describe it.
Yeah, I definitely have some comments about this comic and what it's saying.
Yes. And there's a lot to say about it. But before we get into that,
Starting with the arting. What was the artist's name again?
The artist's name was Daniel Semper.
Are there any colorists or letterers?
I've got the DC official like breakdown,
yeah,
to like the blurb and the,
yeah, yeah,
and
totally,
descriptions. And it hasn't mentioned them. If we go to the first issue, so we also have colorist Tom Umori and letterer Clayton Cowles.
Awesome.
Yes.
So, the art.
What did you think of the art?
It was really good.
I thought it was really good. I thought it was keeping with the DC house style, but
yes,
still managed to make itself feel a bit unique and give itself a bit of own identity as well.
First things first.
Mm-hmm.
Very little jank.
I did not spot any jank.
No, me neither.
No.
It looked great throughout. You know, I mean, the character model they used for Wonder Woman was fantastic. I think... So again, you know, limited knowledge of Wonder Woman here from this side. I'm definitely, you know, I'm becoming a more engaged comic book reader because I've made...
Whether you like it or not.
Yeah, I've now made 60 fucking episodes of a podcast about comics. I'm learning, guys. I don't really know much about Wonder Woman, but I recognize this as being a very traditionally colorful costume design for her.
Yeah.
Which I thought looked fantastic. I mean...
It's very old school.
The way she was drawn facially just made her look like a very beautiful woman throughout.
Oh yeah, 100%.
And I think that's, you know, a really apt thing with the Amazonians. Then they're really big, tall, beautiful women, right? That's their thing.
Yeah, it's definitely a paradise of women only kind of thing.
Yeah,
it's half and half because on the one hand it's like, how do they all happen to be so beautiful? But also they're maybe kind of descended from gods or something. Like,
yeah,
it's very changed a lot. But also it's like most people, if they're not explicitly ugly in comics and just media in general, they're by default they're handsome or beautiful because,
absolutely,
because that it's like the Hollywood stars, like, are they meant to, does it say ugly in the character description? No, get Tom Cruise, like that's
but
how
there were panels of close-ups of her face where it was like this really striking woman with, like, you know, I did very briefly over, do you know the golden ratio?
Yeah I know gold. That's one of the few things I actually do know about.
So for anyone who doesn't know what the golden ratio is, it's a template that you can put over a face and it's like the most attractive version of a face in terms of like symmetry and feature placement. There are YouTube channels where people take celebrities and Photoshop them to put their face into the golden ratio. That's quite interesting. But I did very quickly have a look at it, and like there's these panels of close-ups with these striking blue eyes, this really well-presented face that's really like closely aligned to the golden ratio, and I'm like, yeah, they knew what they were doing here.
Yeah,
I
know about golden ratio because I did photography at A-level, and then I never took a photo again.
Absolutely.
It's a well-earned time there.
Very useful. I thought, so there was a particular issue where the art sang for me.
I think for most issues it did for me, but go on.
Issue 2.
Yep.
So there's these two concurrent fight scenes that are happening in issue 2.
Yes, I know exactly, yeah.
One of her proving herself in a gladiatorial setting, and then another one of her fighting an entire army.
Where she's literally, and this is not a spoiler, she's literally throwing tanks at army of military soldiers.
And like superhero shenanigans, yes.
But it also looks great.
Yeah, and as a comic book reader, like one of a question that I would potentially go into a comic book like this with is, what would Superman, Batman, or Wonder Woman do if presented with an entire army? And she fucking girl bossed it.
Yep.
And it looked fantastic.
There's a great bit about her knowing how battles work, and even though the technology has changed. And I thought, it's one of those things where I was like, I like this. I have a sense it might be bollocks if you spoke to anyone who actually knew military tactics or something, but it was enough. You remember I said before, we were talking about World Tree and the whole internet thing, and I was like, I know enough that is, I know it's wrong, and therefore it's kind of taking me out a bit because I know it's wrong. This was like, I don't know anything about this, and it sounds plausible enough to be
really
believable
accurate
in the moment, yeah.
So if you were fighting on a medieval battlefield, your archers would be up front.
Oh, right. I believe all that stuff, I think, is like well-researched.
Pounding volleys in, and then your cavalry would do a pincer maneuver around who was left. So your cavalry would go right and left around who was left and crush them into the center of the battlefield, and then your infantry would run through them.
Yeah.
Like, that is how a lot of medieval battles were won and lost.
Yeah, that stuff I believe is true. It's what for me was like, even though technology has changed, these have, and I was like, I think droning people from orbit is like changed the game a bit nowadays.
But it's still the first thing they do.
Yeah. but then now it's like eliminated the second and third parts now, because like if the drone doesn't work,
I
what
mean,
do you
I
do?
Think the thing that's really sad is that we have seen a big world conflict in Europe playing out in Europe, and it's still playing out, and there's been a tragic loss of life, and that is largely the process that was used: artillery strikes, heavies going in, and then boots on the ground. It's
fair enough.
Yeah, no, I think whoever researched and wrote that passage did a really great job. And throughout that issue was my favorite issue of what we've read.
Yeah.
You know, there's only 6 issues of it floating about at the moment, isn't there?
Yes. And
but that one was my favorite. I thought the art was fantastic. I thought those two concurrent fights were a fantastic way of showing me everything I needed to know about Wonder Woman's character.
Yeah. I'm trying to rack my brain a little bit. Is that a Tom King special? The concurring things?
I mean, you know more about Tom King than I do, so I'd probably defer to you on that one.
It feels familiar, but I cannot recall any specific examples. So
no, I mean, another place that we've seen it used to great effect is in the Old Man Logan.
Yeah,
run.
The following series, not the original one.
Yes.
Which we need to do that original.
Totally,
one
we need to do it, but
Lead up to Deadpool.
Oh, no. Are we going to talk about Deadpool, Ryan? I wonder, as a comic book podcast.
We might do a month. Potentially.
We did float the idea, didn't we?
It's being flowed. It's being flowed.
But no, I just thought it was a really, really great narrative device, and it showed me everything I needed to know about Wonder Woman in terms of her abilities and her powers.
Yeah.
But also her character. And, you know, you're seeing her character develop in a really early stage, but you're also seeing the culmination of that. And so, that could have been 2 full issues.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
The events of that issue could have been 2 full issues. And by bringing it together, I think it made it a really, really great, powerful comic book issue.
Yeah. And in classic Tom King fashion, we'll get into it in story. Hopefully I'll remember. But in terms of the character model for Wonder Woman, I think, I don't know if they've been doing this consistently or not. Again, for my sins, I've not read any Wonder Woman up until recently. She's probably the most famous superhero that I know the least about.
Right, okay.
I think as a kid, like, and I think when you're a kid, there is like a culturally inserted
bias towards male heroes.
Yeah, I think that's the best way to describe it. So as a kid, you're like, yeah, but she's a woman. I want the, you know, and that's as a kid. And I think that carries over in the sense that you like the ones you like when you're a kid.
Yeah.
So even though you grow out of that kind of bollocks, toxic masculinity stuff.
Well, you hopefully you do.
Yeah. You still kind of gravitate to the ones you liked as a kid. So yeah, for most people, that's your Batman, Superman, Spider-Man, what have you. And now, and then like in later life, it's now because the point's like, I, for age, I've been like, I should read Wonder Woman. Like, I should really give her a try. And I just haven't got around.
And it's come up a few times in our conversations about the podcast where we're like, it's kind of noticeable that we've only ever really talked about her in passing when she's turned up in a Superman run.
Yeah.
But honestly, this comic has made me interested to read more Wonder Woman. I think what's really interesting is that this podcast in general has made me more interested in female superheroes.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I love Supergirl. Every iteration I've read of Supergirl, I've thoroughly enjoyed. Really enjoyed Wonder Woman. Really enjoyed Poison Ivy. You know, I'm really enjoying the female heroes at the moment. I think there's often more interesting stuff happening in their runs.
I would say that there's more opportunity for more interesting stuff, depending on like what route you go in terms of like how much like real world sexism do you involve in it.
Yeah.
And I think there is a larger conversation as well about you don't just because a superhero is a woman, you don't have to include, you don't have to address sexism at each time. Like, not every woman superhero has to be like, and how is she fighting against the patriarchy?
And that's the central, I think on some level, that's the central observation of something like the Bechdel test, whereas actually we can have stories where women excel and it doesn't have to be a point of interest that they are a woman whilst they're excelling.
Yes, exactly.
And I suppose this story really hones in on the gender thing. It does.
It does, for sure.
Because of the... But again, I think it does so in a way that more closely aligns it to the conversations that happen about race and ethnicity in America.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And, like, the whole, like, nationalism.
But, yeah.
And everything like that. Before we get into the story, a couple more points about the art.
Before, yeah, go for before it, sorry.
We've both done a tangent. Before I do, it's a tangent still about the comic.
Yeah.
The depiction of Wonder Woman that I was going to say earlier, again, how muscular she is now.
Yes.
I don't know if that's been consistent in time, but it definitely looks more prominent in this than in previous iterations that I've seen, at least. Very appropriate. Like, you're going to be like the warrior, literally a warrior princess, essentially.
Yeah.
I don't know what I was trying to avoid, like the Xena warrior princess comparison. But yeah, for being that much of a superhero warrior, you would expect her to be in the same way that Superman is always depicted as extremely muscular, like
except for when he isn't.
Yes, that one time. But you would think, like, with super strength, someone wouldn't need to be muscular.
I know, and this is always a thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
But I suppose if you've already got super strength, surely every kind of bit of strength you gain through muscularity is exponential, right?
That's one way to look at it. The other way I thought was if you've got super strength and you're still using it to reach the upper limit, so like you're lifting cars or jets out of the air or stuff like that, that's the equivalent of like someone lifting weights in the gym.
Yeah.
So if you're doing that consistently and you're saving the day using your strength, you probably would be getting a workout each time,
and you'd probably want to be as strong as you can. I suppose to actually really hone in on that, it's the 80-20 principle, isn't it?
You say that like I should know it.
So the 80-20 principle is...
obviously I do know it, but for the listeners.
Of course, for the listeners. Yeah. It's a principle that generally holds true through most of life, which is that... So the 80-20 rule is a principle that governs input and output. So people will argue that 20% of your input gets you 80% of your output.
Right.
And so it means that if you are trying to do something, really only the first 20% of what you do will get you 80% of what you need. To get that last 20% is where you put in the next 80%. And so applied here, it's like 20% input for Wonder Woman is just having super strength. To get that last 20% of her strength, she has to put 80% of the input in, and that's why she's so muscled. Do you see what I mean?
I do not understand.
Okay.
I think I have like a vague idea of what you're going for, but the words put together did not quite make sense for me.
Mm.
But write in if you understood what Jamie just said. Let us know. Let us know in the comments or ryan@comiclitter@gmail.com.
Essentially, what I'm saying is that last 20% of effort you put into something doesn't get you much. Doesn't get you that far, but it's what you need to get over the edge. Like you're gonna get 80% of the way there with 20% input, but that last 20% is often the important bit, and it's where all the effort, all the input comes into something.
This is definitely going to be a topic I put in the description of Jamie tries to explain the 80-20 principle.
Jamie tries to explain something he's read maybe two articles on and doesn't fully understand.
I cannot cast the first stone when it comes to that.
Yeah, well, yeah, not this is it, isn't it?
The only other part of the art that I want to mention is the panel layout. Now, that is a very specific criticism of the Tom King comic book. So this is one of the few instances where we know that that is the writer laying out the panels specifically, which apparently does seem to be mostly the norm, but also there's some instances where that's not. So
yeah,
who knows? But this, I noticed immediately, one of the first pages was almost a 3x3.
Yeah.
And then the bottom line was 2.
Yeah.
I was like, you've taken one panel out of that. I thought it was like a, oh, you think I do 3x3s all the time, do you? Well, it is almost. It is an 8.
And I must admit, there were some moments where... So there were some moments where it was laid out really, like, okay. And then there was this other moment where it was laid out really beautifully. And I thought, like, it'd done a stunning job of conveying something that I often think is quite hard to convey in comic books. Two people are walking in the rain, right?
Yeah.
And instead of presenting that as individual panels of them walking, they gave us one big splash panel of the scene, and then put white lines around it to indicate that they were moving through that scene.
Yep, that was great.
Yeah, it read really well for me. And I thought, oh, that's interesting. I've never seen that before. And that's a really elegant solution to the problem of depicting two people moving through a space having a conversation in a comic book.
Yeah. So in some ways, Tom King is a genius when it comes to panel layout.
Looking at that, though, that kind of felt like something that maybe an artist would have thought of.
Maybe.
It's a very visual solution, isn't it? Like, it's a highly visual solution. And
true.
Again, it's a little bit, it's almost a little bit avant-garde. Well, not avant-garde, but a little bit, how do I put it? It's not necessarily a direct representation of what's happening, because we're seeing a whole scene with multiple character models moving through it. And our brain has to do a bit of the work to say, oh, no, that's them showing us them move through the scene. But I thought it was a really interesting, elegant solution to that problem. And I definitely wanted to talk about it when we talked about panel layout, because so much of the time we go, yeah, it's the horizontal thirds or it's vertical thirds, or they're using lots of splash panels and they're not doing this. Whereas actually they did something interesting here.
Yeah, and a couple of times as well, which was knowable.
In a publishing house where doing interesting stuff isn't necessarily so much rewarded, you know?
I do think this is a case of Tom King's previous success getting him a little more leeway to do it his style.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. 100%.
I noticed a more liberal use of the 2x4s instead of the 3x3s. So in the scenes you were talking about with the fights, the two battles, a fight and a battle going on, that was very obvious that you needed them side by side, and it flipped them either side. So you kind of went, you read it like one on one side, one on the other, and then it went the other way. But that was important because you're showing two events simultaneously.
Yeah.
But then they use it again for Wonder Woman in a lift elevator, whatever, with a security guard who's like, hang on, you're Wonder Woman, and then like pulls out his gun and she just kicks him. And that's in the 2x4s as well.
Yeah.
So definitely branch out to other uses. I don't know if it's just kind of become like a bit of a meme now with Tom King. It's like, oh, you got a 3x3 in there. Then the first page is almost a 3x3. But yeah, I think there was some good uses, and there was also some, like, I noted at one point, I was like, oh, is he not doing the 3x3s anymore? And then I read a 3x3. I was like, there it is.
We love a little Tom King 3x3.
I was the Leo meme, you know, pointing at the page.
How do you know you spend too much time thinking about and talking about comic books? Is when you get into the panel layout on a podcast episode. I think that's how we know that we're balls deep in this problem now.
That's why people come to us, man.
Yeah, apparently so. Like,
because we do the nitty gritty that others either don't think to do or can't be asked to do.
I know, right? We're blazing trails in our genre.
Yeah, in our niche.
In our niche, within our niche is influencers.
Yes. So I think that's kind of covered it, because again, there's some unique points that were very good, but for the most part, it was still pretty close to the DC house style, but like one of the best versions of it, I would say, for sure. Story-wise, the first thing I know is very quickly, classic Tom King, not introducing the main character for like a while in.
Which I didn't dislike. What I did dislike is what he did instead.
Right.
Which is that fucking narration in the blue boxes.
Yes. So that the first and main thing I think we should say about this comic, now that we're talking about the content,
yeah,
is it's very dense, and most of that is the narration.
It's not a quick read, is it?
No, not at all, despite how we tried.
Fucking hell.
But the narration is a lot. I think this is probably the, like, Tom King's done great narration before. Mm. I was comparing, obviously, very quickly to
Supergirl.
Yes. So, because a lot of his stuff has narration in. Human Target has the best comic narration I think I've ever read. Like, that's so introspective of the character. But it's more relatable to the one, to Supergirl one, because that is a narration from a third party describing and talking about the events.
And I'm going to be honest with you, I didn't find it as compelling here as I did there, because I don't think it tied into it in as interesting a narrative way. What we were seeing there was this really delicate sub-narrative, and it was based on, like, the fragility of memory and the different ways that people remembered these events. Whereas this, it felt like a more omniscient narrator.
Yes.
And so I think, you know, in giving us a less reliable narrator in Supergirl, he made that aspect of it more interesting. Whereas here, it didn't hit the mark as much for me.
I found that, in terms of those comparisons, I found the Supergirl one worked a lot better because you're introduced to the narrator as almost the main character.
Yeah, absolutely.
So all the boxes that come up from their narration, you're reading them like, oh, that's the girl who, at the beginning of the Supergirl comic, her dad's been murdered. And you're like, what's happening with... I'm interested to know what's happening with her. And
we're also seeing a more quote-unquote accurate retelling of what's happening on the page. And then we're seeing her remembrance of it however many years afterwards, and they're playing off against each other.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really interesting. And I didn't get a sense that it was being used in as good a narrative sense here.
Yeah. So here the narration is coming from a character we're only introduced to at the end of issue one.
Yeah.
Who turns out to be essentially the antagonist behind the scenes.
Yeah.
Which is very superhero shenanigans stuff.
Absolutely.
I thought this is one of the better way in terms of introducing the antagonist. I quite liked it. Like, I think it's the best version of that.
It's doing something, isn't it? I'm not saying it's completely without merit.
But the narration itself is the best I can describe is it's such waffling.
It's chewy, isn't it?
I don't know if that is waffling a British thing specifically. I don't think they have an American.
I think it might be, yeah. But what would an American describe it as?
I don't know. That might be like per state. Like,
yeah, like this is
close,
it.
Colloquial.
Right. Get me my dictionary.
The most universal way I think I could describe it is he's just talking bollocks for like, for such long passages. And it's only like thematically, like sometimes he's describing what's happening and it feels so distant from what's happening. Like he's talking about things in like ethereal, like thematic kind of ways. And he's talking about how great Wonder Woman is while she's beating up a bunch of soldiers, right?
Yeah.
And I made the note explicitly. At one point he said, we have an idea that's the antagonist, and he's talking about how this shadow society that we are, we're not afraid of government or the Justice League or any of them. And then it's like, but Wonder Woman, we were buffoons not to be scared of her.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's you're telling us instead of showing us.
Yeah.
And you show us in the next issue because she beats soldiers with a tank.
And and this is the thing. It was overkill, wasn't it? If I was getting something from it, I wasn't getting from the actual story. I'd be like, okay, you know, it's expositional, it's whatever it is. But he did such a good fucking job.
Yeah.
And he did such a good job of showing us just how powerful this woman is.
If you'd save that rhetoric for the next issue, it would have been much closer. But and it feels weird when you've got what is the antagonist being like, and we were fools to be scared of her. And I'm like, you're meant to be telling me the antagonist is like a big threat.
Yeah.
I think you're going too quickly to be like, this is an old rich man and he's going to be beaten by the cool woman superhero. And I'm like, I like the theme, like, do that.
Yeah, totally.
Don't tell me you're doing it. It came across a bit pandering, like in the first issue. I want the antagonist to be as evil and bad as possible so that when she beats him, there's the catharsis of like, you were an arsehole. You underestimated Wonder Woman and now she's fucking beating the shit out of you. But now we've got like, we were buffoons not to be scared of her. And I'm like, okay, so I know he's going to, she's going to be him, which I knew already, but now you've told me it's happening as well.
But I wanted to have a journey while I got there.
Yeah.
You know, I wanted to go on that journey with you while there was things that she had to overcome. I mean, I wanted a hero's journey, and it kind of takes an element of that away, doesn't it?
give me the old sexist evil man.
Yeah.
And then have him, like, show me him being beaten later, because that's the reward. But yeah, I think it was just kind of jumping the gun of being, again, pandering. That's what kind of felt to me. And I don't think it was intentional. I don't even think it was misguided. I think just the execution was a bit off. And when you're doing stuff like this, if the execution isn't great, then that is what it kind of defaults into, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
But again, it's just there's loads of text in that monologue, which I don't think adds enough to warrant it being there. Sometimes it does. Sometimes it's telling you about the characters that are on the page.
And if they'd only done that, we'd be talking about how great the narration was, right?
Like, there's parts where narration, for a prime example, narration is telling you about this new character, Sergeant Steele.
Rad.
Yeah.
He's so rad.
And he is a prime arsehole the entire time. So I really want to see his comeuppance.
Yeah, totally.
Because there's no monologue from him being like, I regret being an art. I regret calling Wonder Woman a bitch. I've actually learned my ways now. And
no, he's just smoking a fat cigar with his iron hand, calling Wonder Woman a bitch. And he's like, she's going to punch you in your face. And she does. She crushes his hand. And it's amazing.
And he kills some Amazonian woman.
Yeah.
Who is basically in front of a adopted kid.
Guns her down in the street. Yeah. I mean, I want to get into that a bit more when we talk about the overarching themes. Because some of the themes here are really interesting.
Yeah.
And dark.
We can get into themes now if you want.
Yeah. So with the way that they decide to deal with the Amazonian problem, it feels like they set it up quite clearly. They're dealing with that as an immigration issue.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And so they're forcibly removing these people from America. And we have a scene that you've just alluded to where they're trying to get this Amazonian out. And she's saying, well, my daughter lives here. We're working with a lawyer. And then he says, oh, well, your adopted being in air quotes, daughter will be well looked after. And it's like, oh, this is children
in,
being separated.
In a facility.
Yeah. And you know, that was so reminiscent to me of so many atrocious things in history. I don't know if you know about the lost or silent generation in Australia.
I've heard of it. Yeah.
So it was an instance in Australian history where Aboriginal people were removed from their families.
Yeah.
To be raised with white Australian families so that they could stamp out the Aboriginal culture. And seeing those tactics be used here, essentially in an act of, kind of ethnic cleansing, was, you know, that really hits on some of the darkest moments in human history.
Yeah.
And it's in a fucking DC comic book about Wonder Woman, you know, like they really went there. And I think it was, I don't know if it was sensitively dealt with, but it was candidly dealt with. They were really candid about what they were trying to say here.
I feel like it was realistic, which I think, regardless of, like, again, how sensitively you deal with it, I think dealing with it, representing it realistically, I think it's better for the subject. Like, if you are trying to talk about how serious the subject is, sometimes the sensitivity can deter from, like, presenting it as harshly as it actually is.
Yeah.
So, and this is where you also had the rhetoric, real life rhetoric, being used in this instance, like for like, it's the same situation. Yeah. So they're talking about the danger that these people pose, and referencing one specific situation as the example of, like, this is why these laws need to be made.
Yeah.
And I think what's good about it as well, what's smart, is it uses, so within the story, an Amazonian woman who we don't know yet, she is in a bar and basically gets into a fight with a biker gang, essentially, and kills 9 men in this fight. So this is used, and the only 2 women in the bar were unharmed. So immediately this is then on all the news channels, and it's becoming this is the reason why the Amazonian people should not be here kind of thing. And it's one isolated incident, but that's being used to denigrate an entire race of people, essentially. But what's smart about it is that it's a real situation within the story, a real situation that is being overblown.
Yeah.
And then as the story progresses, we see the machinations behind the scenes to fan the flames.
Yeah.
So it's like they were waiting for the one situation. And for all we know, we don't know if that situation, how it happened, because the entire thing takes place while looking at a pool table.
Yes.
And then we see some bits of the fight, so we don't know how it actually started or that's the mystery that's going on in the story right now. But then seeing it, the propaganda kind of being manipulated behind the scenes.
Yeah, and we get a thing that we got a lot in the Spider-Man comic, which I think is used to better effect here, where we see the news media presenting this, and we see, you know, the way that it's being presented, and it's just so reminiscent of what actually happens in the real world when these kind of things happen.
Yeah, it's how the facts are being manipulated, so that even manipulated into propaganda, so that further on, you can't say, well, it's not false, it's like misrepresented truth, yes, is the best way, because that's more insidious and more effective than outright lying.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know these are the tactics that, God, we've already gotten to the Nazis. Yes. These are the tactics that what's his face established for propaganda.
Himmler?
No.
Goebbels?
Oh, Goebbels.
I was going through my Nazi like Rolodex of like who are the worst ones? Yeah, like, are the top brass?
Heydrich, Himmler, and Goebbels.
Yes.
Goebbels, you know, Goebbels' method of propaganda. And, you know, you look at the way that propaganda is done all over the world now. You know, we live in a country that's fucking prey to it as well. And we're seeing a pretty good representation of the way that people are propagated towards. And it's like, that's fucking scary.
Yeah. I think this does, again, a good job of like showing that slow build.
But not making it clear that that's what they're doing. At no point does he have like a propaganda minister walk through and go, oh, we're going to create some propaganda against the Amazonians now. You just see the end result of it. And I'm like, oh, you are showing me this and not telling me you're doing it. You're letting me work it out for myself.
But also I like Steele, I think has, I can't remember if it's Steele or if it's someone on the news or an interview or something. But the way they describe it, like, America is hosting these Amazonian people as guests, but they're violating the rules. So we're within our rights to kick them out. And they are using that language of like each sentence, like each word and sentence, like you've strung together so it's coherent and it makes sense, but it's completely avoiding the bigger picture of what's happening.
And it's also not the way that those things should work.
No, it's isolating, like, well, if this means this, then this means this. It's like you've just skipped a bunch of steps in between.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you've skipped the step where actually that's just highly unethical. And so, yeah, I thought that was really interesting, and I thought it was really cool to see that being dealt with so aptly.
There's a little bit of a X-Men aspect with this as well, because of the because the Amazonians, I think, by and large, are meant to be somewhat enhanced.
Yeah.
Like, magically, I guess, because of that's the lore of the, you know, the Amazonians and the Themyscarians, I think, is the proper name for them.
Okay, cool.
But I think that Amazonians is like the colloquial term in America used, but Themyscira is the island that they're from. So think it's Themyscarians.
And isn't that such a typical post-colonial white person thing to do?
Yep.
Take somebody's native name away from them and use your own name for them because it gives you control over the fucking narrative.
We thought that we were sailing to India, so we're going to call you Indians.
Exactly that. Yeah, absolutely.
But so the enhanced element does ring true of X-Men, because with that, the racism allegory there is, you know, assigning danger to an entire race of people.
Mm.
But with this, when it comes to the superhero stuff, you do have that added element of like X-Men specifically. It's like teenagers developing powers, and one of them could literally be a nuclear bomb.
Yeah.
But then you use that very specific hypothetical in the X-Men world, which could be true, but then you'd be like, so we should get rid of all mutants. Yeah. And that's when it becomes the issue.
And it's interesting because you see it happen in this like small insidious way here, where they say, you know, the news media will say things like, which some people are calling terrorism. You're like, well, no, that's a word that you guys have invented to that's the
Donald Trump special. Some people are saying,
exactly. Yeah. Because once you say some people are saying, you get to say it without saying it.
Yeah. Which is a cowardly fucking move in my books.
Cowardly fucking move. Mm. And it's, you know, I just thought it was so aptly dealt with, and it was gave this whole story a really interesting undercurrent.
Yeah.
Because it's not just, I mean, it ups the stakes, doesn't it, on some level? It's not just Wonder Woman dealing with this adversity. It's everybody from her hometown that she's sworn to defend, right?
Yeah. It also puts the interesting wedge in Wonder Woman's allegiances. Like, she is from Themyscira. She is an Amazonian. And it points out in this comic, and it was one of those moments where I went, oh, yeah. But like she's adopted America as her home to the point where she wears American colors on her costume.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think that's one of those things that like the original costume, they weren't thinking that deep into it. They were just like, put some American colors on her and make her an American hero. But now it's been retconned really well.
It's loaded, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Which is another Tom King special, going back, retconning stuff into something awesome now. Also that, the invisible jet in issue 4?
Yes.
That I was waiting for like a message from you being like, what's the invisible jet thing?
Well, I mean, I was assuming that you were going to tell me what was going on once we got here.
I literally looked up the Wikipedia because yeah. I don't know that much about it as
oh,
well.
Wow.
I've just known, but it's a staple of Wonder Woman.
Okay.
So in my research, it's basically back in the like original 60s.
Yeah.
Wonder Woman couldn't fly then. And there's still some debate like
whether she can fly now.
Because
yeah.
literally in some iterations she does and some she doesn't. So it's like today DC still can't make their mind up whether she does or not.
Yeah.
But so back in the 60s, they were like, well, we can't just give her flight because reasons.
Yeah.
Let's give her an invisible jet. And that the original conception of it was that there were planes on Themyscira.
Right.
But Wonder Woman was like, the planes keep getting hit. Let's make an invisible one. Like,
yeah.
Let's use magic to make it invisible. And then it's been retconned more different origins in later issues.
So in fairness, now that we're talking about it, I've seen memes floating about of Superman flying alongside the invisible jet.
That's the Family Guy joke.
Yeah. Yeah. There we go. Her going for a leak. And yeah. she's just like sat on this invisible toilet. And so, yeah, no, I mean, I probably should have clocked it really.
Yeah, they did a good one in the Wonder Woman film, 1984 recently. One of the few good parts about that film, because that film sucked. It's not great. The first Wonder Woman film, great. Like, really great all the way through. Highly recommend, worth watching. The end, it gets really, not only superhero shenanigans, DC movie shenanigans.
God.
Where it becomes, like, literally, it's a really, like, good story about war and, like, the war inclinations of man and like Wonder Woman kind of seeing it from the outside and her assuming that the god of war Ares is like influencing them, and it looks like it's heading to a point where I think everyone, not everyone, but I think a lot of people had this idea, is like, oh, it's going to be that Ares is there but he's not the one who's, because it's set in World War One, it's like he didn't start the war, like he didn't cause the war caused him to be there because he goes where the war
goes.
Ares,
yeah.
But then in the end, it just turns that he's like, yes, I did all of this. And now we will have a fight. And I'm going to become a big gray guy, because that's literally what they were doing in every every DC film at that point.
We wanted someone big and without color.
And yeah, it's so weird that they just went that way. 1984 then went with this whole weird magic wishing plot, which just did not work at all. So, but in that, they had the jet, they were in a jet, and then they're like, they're gonna see us. And she's like, I'll use some magic and make it invisible. And everyone's like, look, the invisible jet, like that. So.
And it's kind of fun when these comic book reboots find a fun, interesting way to weave in something for the nerds.
Tom King special.
This is it. And
classic TK.
Yeah, and there's a lot to be liked here in terms of, you know, the actual quality of the story. Like, I mean, we're getting into, I want to talk about issue 5.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Let's see if I have anything before, because But the amount of issues there are now, let's call that spoiler territory.
Yeah, absolutely. We're getting towards the end of what's available, aren't we?
Just some little bits, like, before we get to that part, I like that. So the reveal of the antagonist, they're called the Sovereign. Basically, the King of America.
Yeah, and, which is a weird concept, isn't it?
Yeah, immediately I was like, there's been a, like, every superhero comic at some point has done a, and here's the hidden antagonist, and they're actually a secret cabal that controls... Literally, there must be a thing where there's so many behind-the-scenes secret cabals of power that they must have some kind of, like, split custody of, like, of the world or America. We're like, right, you rule on Mondays and we get alternate Tuesdays or whatever.
But we all wear pink on Fridays.
Yes, there's so many of them. This one at least felt a little more, not realistic, that's the worst word to use, but it felt a little more, like, ingrained in the culture that it's specifically America, and it's the idea that there's always been a king of or like royalty of America
and
the ruled from the behind the scenes, because they were like seeing revolutions in other countries and going, well, let's not do that, let's hide actually.
And on some level that does happen in America. It's just a corporate elite, not a monarchy.
This is specifically a crown and a throne kind of stuff.
And I suppose it puts this really interesting thing there, because if there is a crown and a throne in America, you know which one it is.
Our one.
You know, like, so conceivably it would be our one, wouldn't it?
I paid a little more attention to the narration at this point, because I was saying, like,
totally.
who is this, what's their deal?
They were dropping lore at this point, weren't they?
And at one point they did describe themselves as people who left England to go to the colonies to in search of wealth. So I think the idea being that they were rich people in England who went over to increase their wealth in the colonies. amassed wealth and power, and then they were like, oh, the British Revolution is happening or whatever, maybe let's assign ourselves as royalty, but let's do it in secret, so let's just do it through like secret power, basically. I think that was the gist of what they were getting at there. So I don't think it's like the royal bloodline from England. Yeah. I think, but it's like, it's close. They were probably related. They're probably like a second cousin or something.
And it's fun because I suppose, you know, this is an American production made for primary, even though it is made for an international audience. DC and Marvel stuff is primarily made to be consumed by Americans first.
And it's about American issues happening right now. Yeah. So it had to be close in that way.
Totally. But I suppose the idea of a monarchy to Americans is a bit weird and scary.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the droves of Americans that come to the UK to look at our palaces and our fucking red phone boxes and our blokes in beaver hats. Mm.
Like a traveling freak show, except they're coming to us for
absolutely. They do so because it really captures the American imagination that we still have these things, these old worldy sort of dated systems of governance. And they go, oh God, you can go to a place where they speak English, but also they have a bloody king. It's weird.
They want to go somewhere where they see the obnoxiously inbred people being celebrated rather than hidden. And that is how you insult two cultures at once.
Absolutely. I'm impressed. That's the short.
That was a two birds, one stone.
That's the short, Ryan. Yep. We're there. We found it.
They were like, what does this relate to Wonder Woman? It's like, you have to go to the podcast to find that out.
But I thought he was a relatively interesting character.
Yeah. I liked, if that was the character by itself, I'd be like, okay, this is a little interesting. The thing that got me was, reveal at the end of issue one, he's holding the lasso of lies.
Yeah.
And I was like, what is that?
Yeah.
Like, let's go. I love this concept. How has it not been done before?
Yeah.
Maybe it has. Maybe it's a TK special where he's like, remember this thing.
Yeah.
But it feels like a new thing.
Yeah.
And as soon as it revealed, like, knowing, do you know what the lasso of truth is?
No.
So essentially, it's Wonder Woman's lasso, magic lasso that she can, you know, whip tanks at
into
the air.
So it's just her, it's her lasso.
But also, when someone's in it or holding it, she can compel them to tell the truth.
Oh, dope. That's cool.
There is actually a great panel in a comic book where she is holding... It's kind of meant to be like a first meeting between Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman. Mm. And she says, I've got the lasso of truth. Like, if you all... Let's all hold on to it and introduce ourselves. It's like, this is how we trust each other kind of thing. So they all hold it. And she's like, I'm Diana, Princess of Themyscira or something. And Superman's like, I'm Kal-El, because like that's his real name. And Batman just goes, Batman.
Yeah, I was going to say, does he just say, I'm Batman?
Basically, yeah.
That's fucking rad.
Yeah. So, as soon as I saw that, knowing what the Lasso of Truth does, I was like, what's that going to be used for? Mm. And I thought that paid dividends, like how that was used later.
Yeah.
So for anyone who hasn't read or just wants to know, this guy basically... He creates propaganda for the whole Amazonian political issue, getting one of the soldiers who survived the Wonder Woman fight, like the one where she's throwing tanks at them. And he's like, how did you feel after that? And he's like, yeah, she overpowered us, but she's a bloody Justice League member. Like, obviously she was going to. And the sovereign is like, don't you feel bad about getting beat by a woman, basically? And the guy, and to credit the soldier's like, no, like, she's a superhero.
I got
like,
beat down by Wonder Woman. That's totally acceptable. Yeah,
like, no issue at all. He's like, okay, fine. Can you just hold on to this lasso quickly for me? Guy's like, yeah, sure, no worries. And hold on to it. He's like, yeah, you actually feel really bad about it. You're like, she robbed you of your masculinity, and now you're going to kill yourself. But make sure you tell everyone first why you're killing yourself.
Yeah.
And seeing that, I've just reduced it quite a bit just to explain it.
Yeah.
I think it's laid out really well.
Yeah, like, totally.
The conversation flows really well and it's, you know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
But seeing it slowly happen still adds that tension. And then when it does happen, that feels more weighted. Like, that's a pretty evil act.
Yeah, absolutely.
The old wrestling thing, you need acts to get over the bad guy.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a good one to be like, oh, I hate this person now. Because they've done something really fucking deplorable. Evil. And now I really want to see them get beat up. So, yeah, I thought that was a good scene. Another little bit I loved was the Amazon extradition entity, abbreviated to AXE. Very cool. The Sergeant Steel character, we touched on a little bit. Very overtly, not only sexist, but just like, I'm happy to do evil shit for the government.
Yeah, totally.
The comparison you see early on, comparing him to the Waller character. Yeah. which, you know, from Suicide Squad. People being like, yeah, he's basically Waller. Maybe he's worse.
I like the way he's described. He's good at killing people, good at following orders. And then he went off to be a PI and it turned out he wasn't very good at being a PI.
Yeah.
Like, he is good at two things. He kills people, he follows orders.
Yeah. And he has this metal hand that shoots, like, he puts it a finger gun and it shoots. And that was, I was like, that's a cool thing.
Yeah.
But then Leia, Wonder Woman crushes it. And that's cool because it's just like, she's overpowering this dickhead. And then there's a really subtle reveal where he's talking to someone. And it just kind of pans out from him a little bit. And you see his stump on his hand. I was like, oh, has he not got a hat? I thought he was wearing a glove. Like, no.
That was his hand.
Yeah. And most comics would have just been like, splash page reveal. Like, he has no hand. Ah! I thought this was really cool to just subtly be like, next. You're literally going through little panels and you go, wait, has he not got a hand? Like, I thought that was a cool way. But how they describe him as well, like, as you say, he's in the middle of like about to entrap people who are stealing secrets or something, and he's like, I've got to cut this short, basically I'm going to kill you both. So good introduction of that character. It's a bit later where he got the introduction of the invisible jet I mentioned earlier. Wonder Woman goes to visit Sergeant Steel in his office, basically fights her way to his office to be like, hey, I want to chat. I know you've been leaking information to Steve Trevor. It's got to me. You have a lead on this case about the Amazon who killed a bunch of people. And he just keeps banging on about having an army. And I thought that was a really cool, like, that was a like over masculine character who's just been like cornered and he's just reaching for straws and having like a temper tantrum. He's like, we have an army. Yeah. We have an army. And then she's like, yeah, I'll go on invisible jet. And it just appeared behind the window. I was like, that's very cool. And of course, the tiara being thrown.
Yeah.
That's an old Wonder Woman thing.
Yes, which, I'm familiar with that.
Yeah. And I thought, like, seeing that she was throwing it initially, I was like, okay, we've got to still do the old Wonder Woman stuff, but that seems a bit weird in this scenario. Like, maybe it's going to knock a few soldiers out. And then it's just cutting through tanks. And I'm like, oh, that's hardcore.
They've upped
the
ante. Yeah. Like, she got a better tiara, man.
Tom King just took, like, the dials of, like, her character, her, like, aspects, like,
and
you know.
And turned it all the way up to 11.
Strength, just like, that's going all the way up.
But she went full Spinal Tap on it and just turned it up to 11.
Yeah.
And you could walk away and get lunch and that fuck is still ringing when you come back, you know?
She throws at one point, coming out of the elevator, she throws it and like through the gap in the elevator.
Yeah.
And then she comes out and a guy's like, raises gunner, like, hey, and then back of the head just gets hit.
I mean, her going into that office is fantastic. She walks in, where's office 32A, knocks all the dudes out. Don't worry, I'll find it.
Yeah.
Like, really great dialogue, really snappy.
There's one other subtle thing that I didn't notice until a bit in issue 5, which I said to you, I was like, make sure you get this one in because it has this meeting with these younger Wonder Woman prodigy types. The use of the phrase "no, thank you." I thought that was very cool. I don't know if I'm going loftier here, like reading more into it or not. It said to me this idea of like, there's a thing in fiction and representation of women in media a lot of like when a woman gets unhinged or crazy and then all the justifiably and then all the men are like, calm down, and all that bollocks. It said, read to me that Wonder Woman being very experienced and very wise, she's kind of keeping up this air of like, no, thank you. Like, always calm, always well. But she doesn't just use it with you know, men. She also uses it in the fight with the other Amazonian.
There's a whole thing about the use of that phrase as well, which gets into territory that I don't really want to talk about here. But yeah, I know what you mean.
I think what's interesting is it's the same phrase is used in different contexts.
Yes.
So in the fight, it's used in a kind of, in a stubborn, I'm not giving up way.
Yeah.
So it's no, not just no, but no thank you is like...
And that's when she's a lot younger as well, isn't it?
I don't need to give up.
Yeah.
Then when you've got all these men who are like yelling obscenities at her and trying to kill her, she's like, no, thank you.
Yeah.
Like, no, thank you. And then you've got the parts in issue 5. And this is, I think, we're going to get into spoiler stuff for issue 5, essentially. That's when her proteges are trying to help her.
Yeah.
And she has to best them in these challenges. And then when they're saying, like, just let me help you, she's saying, no, thank you. And that third context, and these are just the ones I can think of, but that third context of, I appreciate you helping me, but I must decline.
It really picks up a sense of levity, doesn't it?
Yes. And I thought just how that one phrase being used in all these scenarios is pretty good.
Not levity, levity's humor, profundity. Sure. It picks up a sense of profundity.
I mean, I knew, but for the listeners, for the listener, to clarify,
of course, yeah, you know, I don't like to misuse the English language too much. I'm not an American, Ryan.
Because we always use language so correctly all the time.
Absolutely.
We don't just squash words together into one and then that becomes like the colloquial term, do we?
No, you absolute cockwomble.
Hey, you go, Louis boy.
Hey, Louis boy.
Yeah, exactly. Like that way. So, getting to that last issue, the last issue that we read, issue 5.
The best thing happens, Ryan.
Yep.
Because you know what happens, Ryan? They make some kind of suicide squad.
They make a suicide squad. And it's most direct because Waller is like helping. Like,
yeah.
She's a part of helping as totally. Well. So she's like, the Sergeant Steele's like, I don't know what to do. And Waller's like, you know what you need? You need a suicide squad. They're very handy sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's just good to have one on tap, isn't it?
So there's a bunch of like prolific Wonder Woman antagonists. Dr. Psycho is one that I've seen only in the Harley Quinn animation, which is like a full-on parody of DC stuff, so I've not seen him properly. And then there's Cheetah. It's just Cheetah, but it reads kind of like Cheetah, but she's I think the most well-known Wonder Woman antagonist apart from like the Greek gods. But she's basically an enhanced woman, but she's part Cheetah, essentially. But she can take on Wonder Woman, like, in a fight.
I mean, it's a pretty cool character concept, isn't it?
Exactly. And then you've got some others which I didn't recognize, and this is one part where the monologue did come into its own because it did tell you a bit about them, still in a really roundabout, windy way. But I really like the name of... What was his name? Angle Man.
Yeah.
And I was like, I have no idea what this is about, but I'm sold on
I'm
the
invested.
Name immediately, yeah. Then in the challenges that we get with the Wonder Woman proteges, we get the arrow fight or duel,
which
basically.
Which is kind of cool.
Very cool. The arrows hitting each other. And then you get an arm wrestling match.
Yeah.
Which was cool. That was like talking about strength as opposed to like skills and experience, that kind of thing. And then you get was essentially Wonder Woman and Donna Troy, I believe, playing Injustice video game.
Yeah.
Injustice being the fighting video game of DC characters.
I thought that was really rad. Yeah. I thought that was really good fun.
And then it got a little bit of discussion about the whole Batman versus Superman thing.
Yeah, totally.
did you appreciate the line of Wonder Woman being like, yeah, Batman can plan and stuff, and Superman's always holding back, which is why like whenever they've scuffled, he's not kind of one. It's like, I really think Superman needs to kind of let go a bit, and Batman needs to lose one. I think he'll grow from the loss.
And it's interesting, isn't it? Because in the DC universe, there's only really one person whose power even gets anywhere near Superman's, and it is Wonder Woman.
Oh yeah, she's referred to in a lot of iterations as like as his equal, and I think that's as how it should be.
Yeah,
there's some where she's not, and I'm like, just make her equal. Like,
yeah, she needs to be that powerful. Like, she's such a flagship for their property.
Yeah,
she's one of the big three, isn't she? For DC.
Yes, but the problem is Superman is a bigger flagship. I think that's the thing.
It's the biggest property in comic books, isn't it?
One of, I mean, definitely. Maybe less so nowadays, maybe more so once the James Gunn Superman film comes out.
Yeah, I'm intrigued to see what that's going to do for their comic book output. I'm really intrigued to see how they're going to redress the balance for certain characters becoming less or more popular throughout that process.
I think they'll just slowly bring it in line with films that are successful.
Yeah.
Because that's the problem they've done before, is like there was a thing with the Black Adam character and film. Before the film came out, they made Black Adam look like The Rock in preparation for it. And then when the film bombed,
suddenly
they were like, well, now we're stuck with this rock looking Black Adam character.
You could say, Ryan, that the film did a power bomb.
I was going to say that it put DC between a rock and a hard place.
You went for a rock pun, I went for a wrestling pun. Yeah. We're both out of our comfort areas.
And I appreciated the wrestling pun.
I thought you'd enjoy it.
I thought it was good. It'd be interesting to see if they change the Superman look, but I feel like they're going to cast the Superman actor to look like Superman anyway. So
I mean, in fairness, they had the perfect Superman.
Yeah.
Great Superman and let him go for no good reason.
If only he was written well.
I know. Yeah, he would have been such an amazing... Like, if he'd had a good script, he was the perfect Superman.
My biggest issue with the Man of Steel depiction is... So, comparatively, this is going to be the tangent. You've got the 80s Superman. I think it's 84 Superman. Yeah. And in that, as a kid, Superman, he's gaining his powers, and his parents
are talking
like,
Lex Luthor?
No.
Okay. No, not Lex Luthor. Who's the guy who played Superman and then had a really sticky end on a horse? Is that the one you're talking about?
That's the film I'm talking about. Yeah.
So is that Superman?
Christopher Reeves.
Christopher Reeves was a fantastic Superman, wasn't he?
But what I'm talking about just in the depiction, like to give an example of the depiction of Superman, as a kid, he's talking to his dad and they're talking about his powers and stuff. And then his dad has a heart attack and dies. Mm. And the reason that's so important is it gets across to Superman as a young kid, like, Even beyond your amazing powers, there's some things you can't control.
Yeah.
Which is why it's so important to use your powers to do what good you can.
Yeah.
In the Zack Snyder Man of Steel film, there's a tornado.
Yeah.
Or twist or whatever. And the dog is in a car. So his dad, knowing that his teenage son, who is played by Henry Cavill, I think, at this point. So he's like fully grown, but teenager.
Henry Cavill.
Knowing he has all these powers, he's like, no, you don't go. I'll go.
Yeah.
And he goes and then and lets the dog out of the car, so saves the dog, and then gets killed by the Twister.
Yeah.
And Superman just watches. And it's like, you do not understand character motivation at all.
It's the exact inverse of what it should have been.
Because he could have just literally ran in and saved him.
This is one of the times where him using his powers would have saved somebody.
Exactly, yeah. So it was, yeah, complete misunderstanding of that. But yeah, coming back to the comic book.
Well, I mean, I think we're kind of there, man.
I think we are kind of there.
It was a really interesting story, which
and
was
Jamie's final thoughts.
No.
Do you want British or do you want proper?
Oh yeah, no, you do it, don't you?
Yeah.
You do it for me.
This is last week we established.
I know,
this.
Right? I'm sorry. I had a long week.
So do you want British or do you want formal?
Did you ever watch The X Factor?
No, but I think do you mean like kind of like that Big Brother voice?
No, it's the guy who announced on the X Factor, like, Rachel Adedeje. I want that guy.
Okay. Well, I'm just going to do, I don't know, so I'm just going to do the impression of you doing the impression, which is Jamie's final thoughts.
Great.
Yeah.
It was a really great story that was well told for the most part. I think there was an amazing amount of level of synergy between the artwork and the story as being told.
Yep.
I think the narration could have done with a little bit more editorial work.
Trimming. Lots of trimming.
Yeah, just and again, that's just editorial work. You know, I think what a lot of what we were complaining about could have not been there.
I wish the narration had been as remorseful. I wish it'd been a bit more like, I hate that Wonder Woman for foiling my plans. Or just don't tell us that she beat you in the end. But I wish the narration had made me more excited to see the villain get beaten.
Yeah. And then I think there was some really interesting observations being made about the world that we live in here, which I fucking love it when fantasy and sci-fi does that, and comic books kind of fall under both, don't they?
Yeah, definitely.
So I really love it when fiction does that and it's using these fantasy worlds to tell us something about the world that we actually live in. I thought that was a great representation. I loved Wonder Woman's character here. This gets the highest compliment I can pay something that we read on the podcast.
Ooh.
I'm going to keep reading it.
Wow.
This is one that I'm actually going to make an effort once every month or so, pick up the issues that have come out, give it a read, have a look at it. I think this is one that I'd like to come back to with you.
Yeah.
Because it was good.
Hopefully, fingers crossed, there should be a Wonder Woman film. If they're rebooting the whole DC kind of line of film. So.
I mean, it would be dope if this was what the film was. It would be so cool if this is what the film is.
Tom King is apparently a creative voice in the DC films going forward.
I know. And we
know we're getting a Supergirl film.
Yeah.
Based on
so
that.
I'm fucking psyched for
Woman
that,
of
Ryan.
Tomorrow, specifically.
I don't think I've ever been excited for a comic book film. And
that's
I'm excited for that. I'm excited for that film.
That was so far off. They've only just cast Supergirl, I believe.
Yeah, I know. I don't even know who's playing her.
I'll have a look. I'll tell you afterwards. I'll show you afterwards.
I know who I think would be.
No, I think it's the girl from... Oh, you haven't seen it. It's girl from House of the Dragon.
Oh, because I tell you who I think would be really good for it. And it doesn't really matter now because it's already been cast. But I'll tell you who would make a really great Supergirl is Kiernan Shipka.
Who was that?
The girl from Mad Men.
Yeah, I can see that. I think she might have been in the running, according to rumors. But yeah, I definitely see that.
I think Kiernan Shipka would have been perfect for it. And she was a fantastic child actor. I'd have not really seen much of her as an adult. But...
She's still quite young, relatively. But she did Sabrina, that show, which I didn't watch, but saw bits. And she looked good in that. So maybe...
Do you know what? I did watch it and she was really good in it.
There you go.
I have seen her as an adult. Yeah, I saw her in Sabrina. Again... Not what I was expecting. I was hoping for a Sabrina the Teenage Witch reboot.
Oh my God. Salem. Bring Salem back.
Oh man, Salem, yes. Like, Sabrina the Teenage Witch was fucking phenomenal for what it was.
I think it's one of those things that's probably better in my head thinking about it. If I went back to it, I'd be like, oh no.
Yeah, totally. Like, yeah. I can't imagine. Yeah. And I imagine Salem wouldn't look great these days because I don't think it was a real cat.
Exactly the same. Yeah.
Just bad animatronics and amongst all this amazing CGI.
Yeah, absolutely.
But no, I thoroughly enjoyed this one. I thought it was great. I definitely think it's worth a read. If you are a Wonder Woman fan, you'll find some really compelling stuff that Tom King has woven in from past iterations.
And if you're a Tom King fan, you'll find some great Wonder Woman stuff in there.
Exactly. Yeah, this is it. This is it. So thank you so much for listening. I really do want to take a moment to just thank you guys, because one of our YouTube shorts just hit 120,000 views today. That's mental.
Who would have thought that us talking about the Batman animated series would have spurred a lot of people to just keep watching the whole 20, 30 seconds clips?
Look at us. Who would have thought?
Who would have thought? Who would have thought? A couple of old boys from around these parts could have achieved such lofty achievements.
So if you are a podcast listener who watched that short, thank you. If you're finding the podcast from that short, thank you. Also,
any of the shorts.
Yeah, I just, you know, I hope you're enjoying it.
There's one comment that I want to
read. A comment.
That I want to mention.
Time.
Yeah, it was one that time. I thought was just particularly good.
Can I do the little jingle for this one?
Sure. Go ahead.
It's comment time with Ryan.
Yes, because I'm the one at the laptop, so I can access the comments. So let me just try to find the comment, because there's been so many comments since the last one. I should be able to find it. So there's a few comments that are given the kind of like, well, actually. So basically.
Which I like.
Yeah. So a fair few comments. A lot of comments were kind of in agreement about the whole, you know, this was quite scary for a kid show. Quite a few comments are rightfully pointing out that even though I don't explicitly say it in the clip, I can see where they're coming from, where it's implied that this is like the first instance of the Joker toxin being used, when that's not the case. Apparently back even in the 40s, which was news to me. So like all the people who were kind of correcting that, thanks. And most comments were just like, hey, this actually happened here. Or like, oh, don't you know this were here? Like that.
And you're the people we want to reach. People who are excited about comic books.
But the kind of comment that I especially love is one from this person who said, love when these people do absolutely no research and put themselves out there like this. Joker used his fear toxin in his very first appearance, frozen grin on the face and all. This was in 1940. Now, I just want to get across, accusing us of being people who do absolutely no research, bang on, spot on.
Absolutely. That's what we're here for.
If you loved when people do that, the podcast is absolutely for you. This is your place if that's what you're looking for. So thank you for the comment.
This is not a well-researched product.
Not
we come in hot once a week with some opinions and you get to agree with them or disagree with them. We don't care. As long as you come and tell us. And if that person did, and thank you. I know now.
If anything, if you've got the impression that we are people who do research, that's on you. Because I don't think we've done anything to give that impression.
Yeah, no, I never have we explicitly stated, I did a bunch of research. Well, no, in fact.
The few times we do research, we say, we actually did research this time.
Yeah, we get excited about the research.
Yeah, rarely. When it rarely happens.
But no, the reach of the stuff that we're putting onto the YouTube shorts, again, for you podcast listeners, it's just a little chunk of what you get every week stuck out there in a more bite-sized form. But the reach of that has been phenomenal. It's been really exciting for both of us. So thank you so much and good night.
Thank you. Goodbye.